ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 20th entitled The Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura, text number 10.
Ye maricyadayo vipra yastu swayambho manuhu tevai brahmana adeshat कथमेतद् अभावयम् ये मरीच्यादयो विप्रा यस्तु स्वायम्भुवो मनुः ते वै ब्रह्मण आदेशात् कथमेतद् अभावयन् ये मरीच्यादयो विप्रा यस्तु स्वायम्भुवो मनुः ते वै ब्रह्मण आदेशात् कथमेतद् अभावयन्।
वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। ये दोस मरीचि आदेह ग्रेट सेजेस हेडेड बाय मरीचि विप्राह ब्राह्मणस् Indeed. Swayambhuva Manuhu and Swayambhuva Manu. They. Why? Indeed. Brahmanaha. Of Lord Brahma. Adeshat. By the order. Katham. How? Etat. This universe. Abhavayan evolved. Translation. Vidura inquired, how did the Prajapatis, such progenitors of living entities as Marichi and Swayambhuva Manu, create according to the instruction of Brahma? And how did they evolve the manifested universe? So there is no purport to this. So we will read further. Text number 11.
स द्वितीय किमसृजन् स्वतंत्र ऊत कर्मसु अहोस्वित संहता सर्वा इदं स्मा समकल्पयन्।
Did they evolve the creation in conjunction with their respective wives? Did they remain independent in their action, or did they all jointly produce it? Text number 12.
Maitreya उवाच दैवेन दुर्वितर्केन परेणानि मिश्रेण च जादक्षोभात् भगवतो महानासीत् गुणत्रयात्।
Maitreya said, when the equilibrium of the combination of the three modes of nature was agitated by the unseen activity of the living entity, by Mahavishnu and by the force of time, the total material elements were produced. So there is a purport to this, so we will be focusing on this verse. So Maitreya said, when the equilibrium of the combination of the three modes of nature was agitated by the unseen activity of the living entity, by Mahavishnu and by the force of time, the total material elements were produced. Purport by His Divine Grace S.E. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The cause of the material creation is described very lucidly. The first cause is daiva, or the destiny of the conditioned soul. The material creation exists for the conditioned soul who wanted to become a false lord for sense enjoyment. One cannot trace out the history of when the conditioned soul first desired to lord it over material nature. But in Vedic literature, we always find that the material creation is meant for the sense enjoyment of the conditioned soul. There is a nice verse which says that the sum and substance of the conditioned soul's sense enjoyment is that as soon as he forgets his primary duty to render service to the Lord, he creates an atmosphere of sense enjoyment which is called Maya. This is the cause of material creation. Another word used here is Durvitarkena. No one can argue about when and how the conditioned soul became desirous of sense enjoyment. But the cause is here. The material nature is an atmosphere meant only for the sense enjoyment of the conditioned soul. And it is created by the personality of Godhead. It is mentioned here that in the beginning of the creation, the material nature or prakriti is agitated by the personality of Godhead, Vishnu. There are three Vishnus mentioned. One is Mahavishnu, another is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and the third is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. The first kind of Srimad Bhagavatam discusses all these three Vishnus. And here also it is confirmed that Vishnu is the cause of creation. From Bhagavad Gita also we learn that prakriti begins to work and is still working under Krishna's or Vishnu's glance of superintendence. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unchangeable. One should not mistakenly think that because the creation emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has therefore transformed into material cosmic manifestation. He exists in his personal form always, but the cosmic manifestation takes place by his inconceivable potency. The working of that energy are difficult to comprehend, but it is understood from the Vedic literature that the conditioned soul creates his own destiny and is offered a particular body by the laws of nature under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always accompanies him as Paramatma.
Om Jnanati Virandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Bhuter Mahadhirya Ima Puro Vibhu Nurmaya Shete Yadamusha Purusha Bhunte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmaka Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime Hare Krishna. Here we can see a series of questions and answers by Vidura and Maitreya. So here the conversation is starting about the creation of the whole material manifestation. It can look a bit challenging to accept how all this creation took place, how all manifestation come about from the first place. And from in this section we can see very clearly how all the creation took place. And it is very natural that one could even question the authority. How can we accept such a fantastic way of creation? And that too, there is a creator. Everything is coming from the Lord. So here we have to make this point that when we talk about creation in Vedic literature, it is not a very simplistic presentation of creation. Rather, it is very sophisticated.
Even in many other world religions, when it comes to creation, it is very simple and it is very straightforward. That is, the Lord desired, then there was creation. However, when one has some intelligence, then one tends to question, how is it possible that just like that creation took place? We do accept the fact that the Lord desired, then the creation took place. But there are steps between the creation and the desire of the Lord. So that is the significance of the section. That significance is that, okay, there are many steps and it is not very simple, the process of creation. One, it is very technical and many terms we may not even clearly understand. So that is a section of creation and people can find quite sleepy while discussing the process of creation. So this is so technical. Many times people find it so difficult, even devotees find it very difficult to understand creation. So people may wonder, you know, I just want to skim through these pages of Bhagavatam to get it over. However, there are many lessons we can learn from this. We can understand how complicated it is, the process of creation. And we can also appreciate the authority of Vedic literature. So one could definitely ask this question, how can we accept the authority of Vedic literature? Because to some degree, currently, the science has taken the proprietorship of authority. Still, people do accept science as an authority to a great degree. Otherwise, there won't be universities. There won't be any education. People do accept the authority of the science. However, if you try to analyze the authority of science, that becomes questionable. So Srila Prabhupada heavily criticized the authority of science, which lead to atheism. Say, for example, if you take quantum physics, quantum mechanics, it claims some authority on the microscopic nature of this world. It takes some authority in understanding the finer particles of this world. But interestingly enough, even the authorities, they say that we don't really know what we are talking about. So Richard Feynman, a very famous physicist, he's into quantum mechanics and he has written Feynman's series of talks, right? Somebody who is into physics, they will understand there is Feynman's series of talks. It's available on YouTube. There are many books written by Feynman. And he says, I can say very clearly and conclusively that no one understands what is quantum mechanics. I can say very clearly that no one understands what it is. And there is a good example, good way of presenting it. Say, for example, everyone knows how to use a television. If you want to watch a telly, everyone knows how to use it, right? You turn on the button, you click the button, you watch, you switch on the power. It's very easy. Practically, many people can use it, or all the people can use it, no problem. But if you ask how it works, it is difficult, right? It is complicated. If you want to know the intricacies of working of a television, which is not too complicated, but still it is very difficult. So this scientist, they say that when you talk about even quantum physics, the same principle applies. We know how to use it, but if you ask about how it works, we don't know. So this is the tool, this is one of the main tools through which they are trying to understand this world. So they don't know the working of the tool. They can understand the end result, they know how to use it, but how it works, it is unknown. And many times, it is counterintuitive. So many of its results and many of its explanations are counterintuitive. So it is going above the common sense of logic and reasoning and rationale. So Srila Prabhupada, he was quite critical about this kind of authority. Because when you talk about somebody's a researcher, that claims respect and position in this world. But Srila Prabhupada said, if somebody is claiming to be a professor, then he shouldn't be a researcher. It's a very deep point that if someone is claiming to be a professor, then the professor must know the reality. Does it make sense? He must know the reality. And if he is still researching into the reality, what does that mean? He's not a professor, but he's a student.
So this was Srila Prabhupada's point. It is a very important point. So if you are talking about a professor, say for example, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can see that Srila Vyasadeva, after compiling the Vedas, he divided them into four and he gave each section into different Vedic professors. So they knew the reality and they could give the reality. So that is the difference between a professor and a student. Student doesn't know what is the reality or any subject he is trying to or she is trying to learn. Whereas a professor must know what is he talking about. So Prabhupada said, if somebody is claiming to be a professor and if he doesn't know the reality, then Prabhupada said, he is a cheater. It's very simple. There is one a conversation in a garden where Srila Prabhupada was with a lot of professors, and they were theologians and professors of philosophy. And Prabhupada asked, so tell me, what is the absolute truth? What is the highest reality? So no one could answer. And Prabhupada said, whatever you are searching for, whatever you are researching into, I can give. That is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada had that purity. He said, like, that is Krishna. And I'm giving you Krishna straight away. You don't need to do all the research, but whatever is the ultimate quest of your research work, that we are giving straight away. So that is Krishna. So this was Srila Prabhupada's approach, which is logical, which is reasonable, that if somebody is a professor, he must know the reality. And in fact, Prabhupada had heated conversations with with the so-called professors. One interesting instance, one professor of Hinduism, he came to Srila Prabhupada, and I think it was a remembrance by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He was mentioning it. It was a nice story where Ravindra Swarup Prabhu personally invited a professor of Hinduism from a university in America to meet with Srila Prabhupada. And there was a room full of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And this professor was there. And Prabhupada asked a question, you know, so define Hinduism. This professor said, I cannot do that. I cannot define what is Hinduism. Immediately Srila Prabhupada picked on that point. He said, if you cannot define Hinduism and if you are claiming to be a professor of Hinduism, then you are a cheater. And many times he asked, you know, Surab Damodar Maharaj, who was Surab Damodar Brahmacharya at that point in time. So Prabhupada asked in an interesting way, so what do we call who claims that they know something, but they don't know really? What do they call them? So Bhakti Surab Damodar Prabhu, he said, we call them cheater, Prabhupada. Okay, so like that. So Prabhupada was just smashing, you know. So he said, if someone knows, he must know, otherwise it is cheating. So it is nothing wrong in trying to understand something through the medium of science, but if somebody is claiming a professorship and using that to deride the existence of God, then that is criticized. It is nothing wrong in the quest of knowledge, because there is, even in the Vedic tradition, there is quest of knowledge through other means other than Vedanta. That is not criticized. But when one uses that to deny the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that has to be addressed. That has to be criticized. And people say it is because of faith. You need a leap of faith to accept something from Srimad Bhagavatam. Then again the question arises, there is inaccessible realms of knowledge. Even many of the advanced physics, it is inaccessible for common public. How many years of education one needs. Even if one can be educated for many years, still, if there is a demand of certain kind of intelligence. So if one doesn't have a certain kind of intelligence, then how can one understand? Even the physics. Even if you talk about quantum physics, if you talk about creation from a materialistic point of view, how can one understand if one doesn't have that kind of intelligence? Even if you say that, you know, it is understandable, it's not understandable. One has to accept only by the basis of authority. So if one accept an authority, then one accept whatever the authority says. So that is happening in this modern world, and we can see the same principle here because Maitreya is speaking. And what is the authority of Maitreya? Maitreya has heard from his spiritual master. He has realized the knowledge by practice after hearing from his spiritual masters. So this is the real way of understanding. This is the real way of acquiring knowledge, because one is hearing. So Maitreya, what is the parampara of Maitreya? Maitreya is coming in an interesting parampara, that is a disciplic succession. Originally, at the bottom of the universe, Lord Anantadev, and the Anantadev and Sankarshan spoke this knowledge to the four Kumaras. And from four Kumaras to Sanat Kumara mainly, and from the four Kumaras, Sankhyayana Rishi heard the knowledge of Bhagavatam. And from Sankhyayana Rishi, he spoke this to Parashara and Brihaspati. And from Parashara, Maitreya heard Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has a bona fide source of knowledge. And apart from that, Maitreya had heard the conversation between Uddhava and Krishna just before the departure of Lord Krishna. So this is the context. So he has heard from the authorities, and Maitreya has realizations on this knowledge. So he is qualified to speak. Here in this purport, it is giving some understanding of creation and how creation took place. Okay, we know God or Krishna is behind all creation, and how it took place? Just by the glance of the Lord. And it is not very simple, because he glanced over Pradhan. And as it is described in this purport, what is Pradhan? Pradhan is an equilibrium state of the three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature are competing. We can read from Bhagavad Gita. There are three modes. There is goodness, passion, and ignorance. We are overtaken sometimes by goodness, sometimes by passion, and sometimes by ignorance. If we are overtaken by ignorance, then we feel lazy, lethargic, sleepy, you know. So that is, we are affected by the mode of ignorance. And when we are in passion, one is active. One just wants to do things. That is passion. And one is in goodness, one can be in present. One can have real presence if one is in goodness. Say, for example, you hear the mindfulness meditation. It is nothing but goodness, the material mode of goodness. It is not anything transcendental. For example, eating a burger in mindfulness is one of the, you know, things that is being taught. How to eat a burger in mindfulness. You eat each bite, you feel each and everything what you bite. So it is nothing but, it's a mode of goodness, just being in the presence. It is nothing great, but at the same time it is good. So there is always a competition between the mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness. So we are being pulled by any of these modes. And currently in Kali Yuga, it is rare to be in the mode of goodness. Because in goodness, one thinks about one's existence. Why am I here? What is good for me? It is mentioned, sattva sanjayate jnanam. When one is in sattva, then one can derive knowledge about the self. So what happens, since after the creation, we can see always these modes are affecting us. What do we mean by affecting us? It is affecting our mind. The three modes are affecting our mind. So mind is in ignorance, passion, or goodness. We can feel in ourselves which mode is prominent in our mind. Just pass through the day, we can very easily see. That's why it is recommended you chant your rounds in the morning. Why? Because morning time, the goodness is prevalent. So in morning, it is very easy to focus on the holy name. Or sometimes even that can be difficult, even in the morning. But it is far better to chant in the morning, because it is much easier to focus on the holy name. See, chanting in the night. Anyone has experienced chanting in the night? Ooh, it is tough, right? It is difficult to focus. One is just trying to finish the chanting, that's all. One cannot focus. It was mentioned, there was always a night chanting club. You know, night chanting club starts at 10 o'clock. You know, just how many rounds? Who was telling? I think Madhav Maharaj was telling. He was telling in the early days, always there used to be a night chanting club. Starts at 10 o'clock. And ask each other how many rounds. If someone says 4, yeah, it's okay. 8, serious. And above 8, it is danger. And the only formula was, don't stop chanting, and don't stop walking, and never sit. Don't stop chanting, okay, don't stop walking, and never sit. And that's it. If you sit, finish. Because the whole day of hard work, and if you sit, next day morning, it's Mangalarati time. So rounds are not yet done. So this is the reality, the influence of the mode of ignorance, how heavily influencing. And in passion, what happens if you want to chant? You start chanting, you want to talk to someone. Immediately, mind will push. I want to do that, I want to do the other thing, I want to speak to someone. That is passion. So yes, so the modes are affecting. We can see the modes are affecting. However, in pradhan, okay, mind is also a matter, right? Mind is matter, intelligence is matter, the body is matter. So everything is made of matter, and in those, the modes are competing to influence. However, in the case of pradhan, what happens? The beginning of creation. All these three modes are in equilibrium. So no mode is acting, no mode is predominant, and no mode is acting. Everything is compensated, everything is neutralized in an equilibrium state. So this is pradhan. So all the modes are present, but nothing is active. So this is the source of creation. And from that point, what the Lord does here, there are three Vishnus mentioned. That is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Karanodakshaya Vishnu. Kshirodakshaya Vishnu means the Lord, who is the Paramatma, who is situated in everyone's heart. And also he is present within the atom. Andandarastam Paramanu Chayandarastam. That Lord, that is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And the source of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. He is the super soul of the one universe. From his navel, Lord Brahma comes. A lotus flower comes, and from the Brahma comes. And the source of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is Karanodakshaya Vishnu or Mahavishnu. So that Vishnu glances over Pradhan. So this is the beginning of creation. So the energy for creation, so the agitation of this equilibrium of the modes take place when Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan. So how this agitation, so it is mentioned, we can see in the purports that in Pradhan, there also matter is present, there is no activity. When there is matter is present, generally there will be some activity, there will be some change. Right? Say, see this Vyasasan, so Vyasasan or this table, say apparently there is no activity, but just give time, what happens to this or what happens to anything in this world, it deteriorates. There is change by the effect of time. You pick anything in this world, any object, you don't have to do anything physically, but it's just a matter of time, it will change. That we can see in terms of our body. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dehinosmin yadha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara prapta dhira satrana mukhyati. It's just a matter of time. One, the embodied soul is captured in a body that changes from childhood, we can see, to boyhood, to adulthood, to youth, to old age. We can see that change. So just the body changes. So is anything else in this world. Everything is changing just by the influence of time. So in Pradhan, there is no influence of time. There is no, the time factor, the material time factor is not present in Pradhan. So there is no change. The equilibrium remains as it is. So that is the source. And as the Lord glances over this Pradhan, what happens? There is an agitation for this equilibrium because the time element is introduced to Pradhan. So as soon as the time element is introduced to Pradhan, what happens? The whole thing started changing. So the cause and effect can exist only if there is time. Can you understand this point? Cause and effect can only exist if there is time. So if you do something, you can see that there is an effect. If you pull someone, if you slap on the face. Okay, there is a cause because you slapped, and there is an effect. Or you pinch. You can see you are pinching. You can see an effect. But there is a time lag between the cause and the effect. Can we see that? And if there is no time, if there is no concept of time, then everything is merged. There cannot be, a differentiation between the cause and the effect. So this is pradhan. There is no cause, there is no effect, because there is no time. So there is equilibrium, which is not causing anything and it is present as it is. Now, when the Lord glances over this, then the whole equilibrium is agitated and from pradhan mahatattva comes. So this is the beginning of creation. Then there are subsequent developments of the matter and how the living entities are entrapped in the matter. So this is the process of creation. It is quite complicated. So it is not very simplistic. Then one can ask this question, how is it possible to have this creation? Why at all this creation? It is because of the desire of the living entities. Why are we here? Why are we here? Not necessarily in this temple. Why this in Albert Park so many people are living? If you ask this question. Why so many people are in this most livable city, Melbourne? Why? Because we want to enjoy. Everyone is trying to enjoy by all the activities. We want to enjoy. Right? Now, for the purpose of enjoyment, that is by sense gratification, gratifying the senses, for that purpose the Lord has sanctioned creation. So here, again, a very interesting point. Okay, we can say that the creation is because of the desire of the living entities. Point number one. Point number two, if you ask why there is creation, the ultimate reason is because of the Lord. We can see in the further purports. Why? Because the Lord desired. Say, for example, if we don't have the capacity to fulfill the desire, we may have the desire, but our desire is insufficient to fulfill the desire. Say, for example, a living entity or the living entities have the desire to lord it over matter, to enjoy separately from the Lord. Okay, that desire is fine, but at the same time, it cannot be fulfilled if the Lord doesn't sanction. In other words, if the Lord doesn't desire, then the living entity's desire cannot be fulfilled. So the ultimate cause of creation is the Lord himself. But the Lord acted, he desired so because the living entities so desired. So the sanction of the Lord is necessary at any stage. So it is applicable to creation and it is applicable to current situation. If you have a desire, if you want to fulfill the desire, we need the sanction of who are involved in fulfilling our desire. In a simple terms, we think, you know, if I want to fulfill my desire, I can just do it. What's the big deal? But who are involved? Point number one, if I desire, that's the nature of the soul, I can desire. Then, point number one, we need a material body. Material nature is required to fulfill my desire, right? If I want to act, I want to move my hand. Can I move my hand? It's my desire. If I don't have a hand, if there is no material energy, can I move my hand? It is not possible. So yes, the soul is required, who desires. Then the material nature is required, who is actually performing this activity. Then one may think, okay, that's all. But there are demigods who are in charge of whole material creation, whole material body. So even for a minor material movement, there has to be sanction and activation of a particular demigod. So we are involved, the soul is involved, the material nature is involved, and the associated demigod is involved. It's complicated, isn't it? Is that fine? No. Then everything has to be sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. So we can see four things are necessary. The soul is required, the nature is required, and even nature and the controllers of the nature are required, who are demigods, and the Supreme Lord is required. So when everything is in place, then the material activity takes place. It doesn't happen without that. So the same principle is applicable in creation also. Everything was initiated by the glance of the Lord. Then further development of Mahatattva, we can see, then the Lord sends his prototype demigods. The demigods also get involved. So the material nature is there. Then the prototype demigods get involved. Then the jivas, the souls are introduced. And finally, always the will, the glance of the Lord is also present. So the same principle of activity in this world is equally applicable in the time of creation. The same principle. So that is taking place. So ultimately,
Everything works by the sanction of the Lord. So here, it is not very simple. We had to understand in the further verses, and as we go on in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a couple of times creation is mentioned. It is not very simple. We can come to a certain degree to understand, but may not be fully. It is quite complicated. Because it is even complicated for Lord Brahma. One senior devotee was telling, if one is really, really interested, if one's whole desire is to understand what is creation, then one has to take birth as Brahma. Then probably he can understand. If a devotee sincerely desires, my whole purpose is to understand what is creation, and I want to understand the whole creation, then probably we don't have a suitable body for that. So if one is very sincere, yes, one can get the body of Lord Brahma, then he can act as an instrument in the process of creation, then he could understand a bit more. It's not guaranteed that he can understand also everything because he's a secondary creator, but definitely much more than what we can. So this is the position. So we understand creation. Why we understand creation? To understand that the Lord is behind everything. To see the hand of the Lord. Otherwise, what's the point? And interestingly enough, when we present Bhagavatam philosophy to the modern world, it may not be acceptable. Say, I was thinking, there are four ways or four approaches in understanding the reality. For example, we want to understand the reality of creation, or we want to understand the reality of cosmos. One approach is we can directly accept from Shastra. It can be quite a conservative approach. Just whatever is given in the Shastra, one accept. Fine, which is required. Then the question comes, all right, if you want to present to modern mainstream worldview, modern science, then how can we present? Then one may adopt to the second approach, that is finding an overlap between scriptural presentation and the modern mainstream science. Say, for example, even about the cosmology, we can see many works of the devotees like Sadabhuta Prabhu. It is finding an overlap between the Bhagavatam presentation, the Vedic presentation, and the modern worldview. So there is an overlap. But at the same time, it is quite clearly we can accept that, you know, everything cannot be accepted as accepted in the modern science. We cannot accept everything. Similarly, there is just an overlap, but not everything. It's not, you know, comprehend. We cannot comprehend everything. So that is one approach. That is accepting the Shastric authority. Second, finding an overlap with the modern science. Third, we can see the modern scientists who are in the mainstream, they just accept whatever is given by the science, and that's it. They reject completely the Shastra. And the fourth is, even in the modern science, there are people who use science, but they present alternate worldviews based on science. So sometimes it can be useful. So when you talk about even consciousness, when you talk about soul, when you talk about creation, when you talk about the cosmology, there are alternate worldviews. So which could be used by the devotees to present or to accept, to explain some of the Shastric, some of the scriptural presentations. But at the same time, ultimately, we give our faith to Shastra. We understand. This is what we can understand. Some things we cannot understand. However, Shastra presents not just the knowledge, but presents a verificatory tool. Shastra is not just giving just the body of knowledge, but it's giving what are the tools through which we can realize everything. It gives a tool. For example, we may wonder, can I really derive happiness on the spiritual platform? So the reality is, we are not eating meat, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. So see ourselves, we are not doing anything still. So these four activities are the pillars of material enjoyment, right? So when people are talking about material enjoyment, it is centered around these four activities, and we are not performing these four activities. Still, we can derive happiness on a higher level. We can become fully satisfied, and we can experience happiness without the four illicit activities, for material activities. That in itself is a proof that we are not just a material body. Because we are experiencing happiness without these four activities. Think about this. One can practically, anyone coming to Krishna consciousness can clearly see. And the more we are going away from these activities, both externally and internally, we get the realization that we have happiness, we have shelter, we have satisfaction beyond matter. We get practical realization. That's a reality. So it's a proof that the process works. And we can learn experientially. So the presentation of Bhagavatam, even though it can look quite theoretical, it can look just demanding a leap of faith. However, there are processes to verify. And that can give us conviction. And that can give us conviction enough to go on in the bhakti process and derive its fruits. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. No, it is not a passing state of mind, or it's not a planet as such. But when you talk about creation, it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam because originally it is a spiritual existence. We understand it is a spiritual existence. Say, in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ahame Vasame Vagre, the Chadushloka is the first, Krishna, the Lord says, I only existed, no one else. I was the only person present. So point number one, it is not a presentation of just I, but it includes all the spiritual creation, all the living entities, all the spiritual world. So when Krishna says, I only existed before creation, it means that in connection to material creation, Krishna existed along with all his paraphernalia, all his pastimes, all his abode, all his devotees, everyone existed. So that we can see, this point we can even see from Nectar Devotion, that when it is mentioned the word Krishna, Krishna includes everything. It's not just the personality of Godhead himself, but his expansions, his devotees, his abode, everything. So everything existed before. Now, when it comes to the material creation, it is just like a dark cloud. The matter is present. So that is pradhan. It's not a planet, but it's a material energy. Because when you talk about planet means it's a creation. Already the creative energy has been applied to get a planet or mind or any of the elements. So nothing has come about. It is just the three modes which are not acting, because the three modes are creating the different material elements, both gross and subtle. When we analyze the world into, you know, five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, five tanmatras, the object of the senses, or the panchamahabhutas, the five material elements, then mind, intelligence, false ego. When you consider any of these material elements, the 23 material elements, all these material elements are ultimately a composition of the three modes of material nature. So none of the elements have been manifested at this point in time. So we are going right back to the creation, where nothing is there at this point. So it is just the material energy is present. So we could see this pradhan as an energy, material energy, which is dysfunctional because it is in equilibrium. And that is being activated, and constantly the glance of the Lord is there. The Lord is supplying the energy for further activation. And we can see the subsequent development of this energy. And in this activity of glancing over this pradhan, the living entities, the spirit souls, which are spiritual by nature, are given to the matter. So this is the impregnation. Just like the seed is given to the womb of the mother by the father, in the same way, similar analogy can be taken to understand that the Lord is impregnating the matter. In other words, in his glance is implying that the Lord is giving the souls, because the Lord is completely spiritual, and all the spirit souls are resting on the body of the Lord, and they are actually being transferred to Prakriti or the material nature. So that is the point of creation. So currently there is nothing there. So from there,
the pradhana is transformed into mahatattva. Again, the mahatattva where the modes are active, that also goes through different stages of evolution, and then the creation further continues. Yeah, onto the body of the Lord. That's right. Pradhan is not where the living entities are present, but that is going to the Karnataka Shai Vishnu. That's right, yeah. No, each time the Lord doesn't have to glance, because it is coming from the... when you talk about the breathing in and breathing out of the Lord, so that is not that, because breathing in, the universe goes in and then comes out. This is talking about original creation. Yeah. Any further questions? Yeah. Time, material time, is activated at that point. Kala Shakti is activated at that point. Kala Shakti is an energy of the Lord. So it is activated at that point in time. So, yeah. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, because from the Lord's body, the universes are not actually coming out. But the seed or the element which can actually cause the universes, that is only coming from the Lord. So that actually goes through the pradhan. So in the further evolution, that goes through. And it ultimately it is coming through mahatattva and the further development. It's not just, even though we simply say that, okay, it is coming from the body of the Lord. It's not just that. Because even in the annihilation, as you see the elements, it actually goes to the next element. Some gross element will be combined to the next element, and it goes to the subtle, and finally it will end up in mahatattva. So there is a process of creation and the winding up process. It actually goes exactly in the opposite way. So in the creation, actually, it is not, when we, even though we say that the universes are just coming from the Lord, first, it is not the universes are coming from the body of the Lord. That's not right. But the seed or the element which actually manifests as universe, they are coming from the body of the Lord, body of Karnataka Shai Vishnu. And that is actually going through the further development of the pradhan to mahatattva, and in that process it's actually passing through. Then it is finally everything is coming about. So it is not just from the body of the Lord, everything is just coming, but there are sequences, and part of the sequence is what is given here. Thank you very much. Granth Sahib Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.